I've got wine, I've got stories, and I've got a fantastic panel with me to discuss the week's tech news. It's the Big Show. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Joining me, the wonderful, eclectic version of knowledgeable sages from across the planet. We are the sun never sets on British Tech Network. And starting us off, James Hart, how you doing, buddy?
Hello. You know, one of these days I want to broadcast on the network from Mars, just so it's inter solar system.
Well, yeah, that'd be great, apart from the fact you'd have to go with your wife and locked up in a tin can for 16 months. And
you don't get to have sex.
And you know, well,
that's a lie. But then, hey, you know, we did that last week.
That's
we did
what that I last heard week. Last night on or last week on this show, which is on the internet. And if it's on the internet, yeah, it's true.
That's true. Yes. Sex. We're going to have to perpetuate then that, on then, aren't we?
Yeah, there we go. How you been, mate?
I'm very well, thank you. Only 292 days till Christmas as well, so I'm getting excited.
Oh my god!
How was the show the other night? I saw you preparing.
Oh, the little wireless thing. Yes, it was. It was. I'm finding myself playing more rap these days, and I don't like it, so I'm going to have to stop. So less rap, less of this Harlem Shake nonsense, and we'll play some proper music, like the Charleston, and maybe a little bit of Chubby Checker's Twist. I'm on the radio, you see.
And you're not drinking, that's the thing.
It's poor, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Poor. Look, empty pint glass.
Someone who's got the right ethic and is drinking, Jeff Gamet, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Well, because I'm drinking, apparently. And you know, the Charleston actually does look kind of like the Harlem Shake. So you could probably do either.
You could do the
Gangnam Style as well, and you'd be got the real. Oh, you,
I can do Gangnam. In fact, there's a video of me doing Gangnam.
We could start a new meme.
Don't do it, says. Definitely don't do it. Beneath Jeff, we've got Sarah from Ireland.
Yes, only just. Going back tomorrow.
All right, okay. The week been good? Swanning around, going down the pub?
No,
the crack.
It's been a mixture of being ill and doing nothing but working and sleeping, believe it or not.
Okay.
I've had two nights of doing all-nighters.
You don't fit in there, do you? Because there's one thing that you can say about the Irish is they don't work and sleep constantly.
No, they do a bit more of this. And it seems that when I'm doing the show is the only time I manage to squeeze in any of this.
That's sad. That's so sad.
It is
sad.
Very sad. And in a country which is known for its Guinness, I'm definitely doing something wrong, I think.
Yes. Now, normally drinking in the middle of the day would be a bad thing, but you don't get to be a member of this show unless you can do it. And proving that point, Chris Eschweiler back again. How you doing, mate? Mr. Audiovisual.
And yes, I do have a glass here, a mystery. I'm not giving away my secrets. But.
No, it's good. Well done, mate. Drinking in the day, that's the key to coming on these shows.
It's the only way to get through the show, to be honest.
It's even worse if you get on the Mac show, because you've got to do it at 10:30 in the morning Eastern. So
I'm just getting home then.
Wait, 10:30 Eastern, so that would be 8:30 in the morning for me.
Do you want to come on the Mac show?
You know, I have no problem with that. I'm a trained professional. I do believe I can drink any time of day.
Doing on the Mac show would be a actually the photo show would be even more of a challenge for where you are.
Yeah, no photo show's an hour and a half earlier, so 7:30.
You lose an hour the next week, and you're practically doing it in the middle of the night again, like Kyle.
Never mind.
No kidding. Wow.
The week in tech. What a week it's been. I keep forgetting where the sodding camera. Oh, Carl Madden, of course.
How are you?
I'll get me coat.
No, the thing is, I've even made you lower third this week.
I'm getting there.
It's not deliberate, mate. It was just, drinking and I've been drinking and you've been drinking and I'm sorry. How are you doing, buddy?
Carl should have gone straight into your memory as a joint thing.
I'm sorry. Yeah, exactly. There's a word association game. I say drink, you say Madden.
Yes, please. All right. Hello, I'm very well, thank you, sir, apart from the cold still.
I humbly apologise. There are no reservations on that apology, mate. I do apologise. What have you been up to?
Drinking. No, I mean, not much. Actually. Just working.
You had a bit of a sesh last weekend, didn't you?
That'll be different from any other weekend because. Oh, okay.
Good point.
It's funny when I noticed on Twitter that you had posted that picture of that pint glass. I was thinking, now let's see, how many times have I seen Carl post a picture of a pint glass? If I had a pound for every time I've seen that, I'd be really rich.
You would, and I'd be really drunk.
Most of them are empty as well. That's the thing.
No, now you do the media show, Carl, with Russ, don't you?
We do indeed. Basis.
And excellent episode the last 2 weeks, mate. Really enjoyed it. I've got to say, I listen to all the podcasts on the network just for, you know, keeping abreast of everything and making sure it's not horrific.
Mm. You said breast.
Breast, sorry, I do apologise. But I've got to say, I listen to the media show and the gamer show out of choice. I would listen to them anyway. So you need to push for reviews, though, mate.
I asked on Twitter other day.
There's no reviews.
I got none. So
we need, now, if you're a loyal British Tech listener, then please give us reviews because it makes all the difference to our ranking in iTunes. And I've got to say, if you haven't listened to the media show, you bloody should. It's a proper show and it talks about media. It's the only show we've got that stays on bloody topic. So please give us reviews. They make a world of difference to us, and they're absolutely fandabby-dozy and spangly. And talking of reviews, we've had a few for this show. Yes. Thank you to Adam, who's left this one. Are you after serious things? Then this isn't the show you want. Big Show's just an all-round brilliant show that gets you listening every single week, run by brilliant people. And you guys get to call yourself brilliant people because you're here and we're running. Muller 999 has also left a remark. This show is best watched drunk or with beer.
And performed as well.
That's a good start, isn't it?
I have clearly joined the right show.
With beer in hand.
It sounds like Alcoholics Anonymous, isn't it?
It is. That's what's worrying. Yeah.
No, there's nothing anonymous about this. These people all know who we are.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
my name's Ewan Rankin, and I've been clean for 35 seconds. With beer in hand, listen to some UK and US centric eccentrics on Tech Talk. Now, you don't write the word centric and eccentric next to each other on a show that requires you to be drunk to listen to it. Because another half hour, I couldn't have read that. Read it. Jack has also written in, Jack Davis podcast fan, so there's no doubt as to who he is or what he likes. I mainly listen to US podcasts, but this show is a great companion to get the UK angle on tech stories. Thank you, Jack. If you want to leave us a review, just go to iTunes, subscribe to us, leave us a review. I don't mind if you want to slag us off, it's fine, as long as it's constructive, just don't call us names. But they make a world of difference to our rankings in iTunes, and the more we get going, the better. We've got over 80 for the Mac Show at the moment. We've got something like 35 for the Big Show, so I want us to get up to the hundreds, please.
Try to make it impossible for Ewan to read.
No, the Mac Show's already on that one, don't someone sent me an email through the other week and said, here's some suggestions for the show. And I'm not kidding, it was four sheets of A4. And I'm like, and I sat down, I thought, I'll price this down into something where I can read out a couple of bullet points. Still can't. The Week in Tech. It's been a fantastic week. And talking back about the Mars mission, more details have been revealed. One of the unfortunate details this week, apparently, is the fact that the loving couple who go up into the Mars mission to go around have got to not have sex, as we said last week. They've got to be with their partner locked up in a tin can for 16 months. They're not going to set foot on the planet. They're just going to circle and come back. And they're going to be surrounded by their own urine.
That sounds like
I thought it was their own poo.
Well, it's that too as well, apparently. Now, there are couples on the net.
Poo.
Go ahead, Jeff.
All right, so here's how I understand it. I'll make it sound all clinical.
They
will reclaim their feces, and then the moisture will be drawn out and recirculated. Recirculated. Wow.
That's what drinking does for you, good man.
Into drinkable water while the dried oh, I'm done with the technical stuff. The dried poo ends up becoming like Adobe in the walls to protect them from radiation. Is that right?
Are you saying Adobe shit? Is that what you've just said, Jeff? Did you just say Adobe is shit?
I wouldn't pay that much for it. I think I just completely destroyed my working relationship with the PR people for Adobe right there.
Don't worry, they're all tossers. It's not a problem.
It certainly wouldn't make for a light rub.
I thought it was funny surrounded in piss, but Jeff's really, really done the business there, mate. Spot on.
Quite literally.
How to take a story about floating in your own pee and turn it into Adobe shit? Because that's every story should end with the line Adobe are shit. There we go.
That thing on the front.
So now that's a challenge for the rest of the show today, right?
Yeah, you don't get any sponsorship off them, or at least you don't anymore.
Not anymore.
Is that what that thing on the front is? That's the desalination plant, is that?
No, that's I have no idea what that is, I have to say. But apparently, no.
It's the sex room.
That's the sex room.
The horrible irony of this spaceship. It has a sex room on the front, but they're not giving you a couple of key to get in there.
Yeah, they've lost the key to the door. No, apparently, urine is extremely good at protecting you from cosmic rays. So they're going to be surrounded by water tanks.
It's really good.
Well, they're going to be surrounded by water tanks, which are good, and then they slowly use them up and it fills the other way. I hope they're compartmentalised. That's all I can say.
Well, I'm just wondering how on earth they came to that scientific discovery. It must have been one hell of a weekend.
Well, there's a cosmic ray lab in the middle of Arizona somewhere that's just a floating just bottle of pee. Yeah, absolutely.
I just hope they don't spring a leak.
Oh, very good, Carl. Thank you.
Can you imagine if they get constipated? No, you have to poo. We will die of radiation poisoning if you don't poo.
I think one of the side effects of exposure is defecation, isn't it? So that's kind of like...
Well, it's going to take care of itself.
Yeah.
I think we should move on. It wasn't meant to last that long. This is a fantastic story. In the middle of Leeds Police Station, in the early hours of the morning, Batman walked in, bringing a wanted individual... I kid you not, here's the CCTV footage. He brought the guy in the jumper and the hoodie in, who is wanted for crimes, and he stood there, handed him over to the officers and said, "My work is done here," and left, and fled into the night, and no one knows who he is.
Is it Batman. Just me, or does that hoodie and sweatshirt make him look a little bit like Robin?
Oh, just a little.
There was talk of collusion, wasn't there?
There was. It was his mate dobbing him in because he was going to dob himself in anyway. But
robbing him in.
Very good. But they haven't found him. So there we go. Microsoft has been fined €560 million over the browser ballot issue, which I've got to say, I'm not the greatest fan of Microsoft. It's been said, but. This is kind of like wailing on a sick dog, I'm afraid. You know, they paid their $1 billion or whatever it was, and we've still got $560 million to go. So,
I'm going to disagree with you on that.
You do? Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes. Okay. So I think that Microsoft weighed the pros and cons of complying with the browser order and decided it would be cheaper for them not to comply and then just pay whatever fines come up. And so this, to them, is simply a cost of business. And that's why I'm very disappointed, excuse me, with Microsoft. And I'm totally okay with them getting the fine. The crappy thing is they can keep getting the fines and they won't care because it's just a business expense for them.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way some people run businesses. Though it's interesting, though, that there are people in Europe who have taken it as part of their daily job to enforce these technical standards and take on the massive corporations in a way that I don't think any other sort of set of governments or federation is doing. So in some respects, I have to respect the EU for that. But obviously, these guys are driving around getting paid a reasonable salary for going, right, who should we... Oh, I don't really like Adobe. Should we go for them next? No, let's go back to Microsoft. That was fun.
Yes. No, I mean, every corporation's in trouble with Google, with the EU at some point. Mm. You know you've made it when the EU send you a fine.
Yeah, about right.
About right. Chat room says, I use Adobe Photo shit all the time. Very good. And there was another one as well. I was seriously tempted to sign up to the Mars space mission with my girlfriend. It would be really good fun to get away from Earth whilst North Korea wipes out the other half. And apparently Batman equals a Chinese takeaway delivery driver called Stan Warby, which the magic's gone now. It's outed. Does he own a big mansion with a cave outside of Salford?
We can only hope.
They managed to find him pretty quick this week, Ewan.
They did, very quick. A flying drone, mini droney type thing, has passed within 200 feet of a jet airliner. Now, I'm quite sure how they measured it, but I just want to state for the record, it wasn't mine because it didn't fly until yesterday.
That's Ewan's story, and he's sticking to it. Yeah, he's even got a YouTube video up to make him look like he's rubbish at it.
I've got proof of the fact that it only just flew yesterday, so.
Yeah, right.
Norse career. I didn't say Norse career. I said North. I'm not that drunk.
The Vikings are back.
And Stella English was the lady who won The Apprentice here in 2010. And she got a £100,000 job at Vigeland Computers. And I want to make sure I get the figures right here, otherwise I'm going to get sued. She's outed them. She's been sacked, in inverted commas, allegedly, by them. Boran, the guy that's the chief executive, sent a public email to the whole of the place saying that's not how we do business here. But one of the things she's outed is the fact that Vigeland has a turnover of £67 million in 2010 and only paid £391,000 in tax. And it had a turnover of £61 million in 2011 and only paid £1.4 million in tax. So they look like they're the next lot in for a good kicking. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's nice that someone can be so bitter.
Yeah, and twisted.
Yeah.
When your boss sacks you, sue him.
Yeah, he didn't sack her. They didn't renew a contract.
They didn't renew a contract. Sacked is in inverted commas. I did say that.
A reality star. So, show star. So, renew her contract. I'm shocked, I tell you.
Shocked.
Now, okay, so in British terms, if she wasn't sacked, does that mean she was made redundant?
No.
She was, okay, so what's the difference?
She was on made a fixed-term contract.
Yeah, made redundant is when your position, they no longer need a head of fixing things, so therefore the head of fixing things job disappears, and therefore you no longer have that job. If they come back and said, do you know what we need, and a year later and go, oh, do you know what we need? We need a head of fixing things and put the job back on, and get into a lot of trouble for that. Mm. So the job becomes redundant, not the person.
Hmm.
Ah, okay. And because the job is redundant, then by default, you are now out of work.
Yeah, but you can't hire someone to do the same job within a 3-month period because the job is redundant. Not
is it
the person.
3 months, is it?
Yeah.
Which isn't actually a long time.
Wasn't Viglan the bad guy in Ghostbusters 2, says Batwedge? They are now.
No, that was Vigo.
Vigo.
No, that was John Virgo.
John Virgo.
And the fact that I actually know that probably accounts for why I don't get dates.
Not trying is another reason, perhaps.
One in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's fine. The EU has put together a proposal to ban all online pornography. They're going to vote on it pretty soon. And I've got to say,
so
listen.
Who just said what?
You can pick on Microsoft all you like, but leave me porn alone.
Who was it who just said what? In a very shocked way.
The European Union is voting on a proposal next week that could lead to a blanket ban on porn in all member states. UKIP have got my sodding vote, that's for sure.
But only Euro porn.
Well, I don't actually watch porn, of course. I'm just saying that you know, it's an infringement on people's civil liberties, isn't it? So,
well, it's not just an infringement of civil liberties. It is regulation of the World Wide Web, not the internet. The internet is a completely different thing. What they are trying to do is establish. I mean, already you've got ISPs who are being forced by EU regulation, as I remember, to get to stop access to the Pirate Bay and other sites. So what they're doing effectively is they are removing the tools. So the end user's access to the tools that would otherwise be available because it's by regulating it. And this is just one further step in the encroachment of the government through the ISPs to control what the users are doing, which I think is, in some respects is a bit of a shame because that's not what the internet's all about. But in other respects, it's what companies like mobile phone companies have been doing for years. AOL did right at the beginning in the CompuServe, if you remember those sort of ecosystems. So it's kind of narrowing it down. So you're doing what they want you to do. So all will be left is Facebook and Mumsnet by the end of it.
I thought the way to do this was the idea of forcing all the porn sites to actually go to the .xxx top level domain. And then obviously it becomes easier for ISPs to be able to say, okay, fine, you know, you've got to be over 18 to be able to access anything that's .xxx.
Well, opt in.
Yeah, it's quite straightforward. I can understand regulating to force, you know, certain sites into the .xxx domain, because then it does become a lot easier to, you know, segment the internet.
Since when did DNS become a government issue?
Ooh.
No, I know. All I'm saying is that rather than trying to have a blanket ban, which is never going to work, you know, if they want to regulate, then actually regulate towards actually saying, well, if you want to offer this kind of content, you're going to have to use a .xxx domain.
Jeff, you had a point.
You know, if you want to see how poorly this is going to go over, look at the United States. And to be fair, we do a lot of things wrong. But look at the whole thing with the United States banning online poker. And it has done nothing to stop online poker. All of those companies that were running the servers in the United States, they took their stuff offshore. And people that want to participate still do without any problem. They go through proxy servers and they're done. And another point is, if the EU bans porn, how in the world are today's children going to learn sex positions?
Absolutely, I couldn't agree.
Well, to be fair, how are young children going to have a completely unrealistic view of what sex is? But that's another story entirely.
Wait, that's not real.
About is since the porn.
No, it's not. Oh my goodness.
The chat room. Sorry, Chris. Go ahead, please, mate.
Well, since the porn industry drives so much of the technological advances and which choices are made for what survives in the technological world, again. You know, there may be no
technology would stagnate.
Absolutely.
The entire internet
may collapse. 3D.
The chat room have woken up.
I love Joe DeMax has just come back asking what on earth is going on. If you've joined us, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we've already talked about poo and porn.
Joe answered the door, and when he came back, agreeing with Sack says we prefer to call them left-handed websites. Thank you, Ewan.
I'm so glad my mother-in-law is watching this evening.
Paulum says, wasn't the 300 free minutes that you got with AOL at the start for porn anyway? Porn is responsible for driving technical innovation. Johnny's agreeing with Chris there. Porn drove Blu-ray, apparently, but I thought that was Sony. End quote. That sucks, says Paul. Oh, hang on a minute. And, I'll miss the rest. There we go. There you go. That was supposed to take longer than it actually did, but never mind. There's a private Pirate Bay MEP, Christian Engstrom, said that the information was announced this morning at 9 a.m. and by noon I'd got 350 emails on the topic that had arrived in my office.
Wow.
Pirate Bay's got its own MEP?
Yeah. There's an MEP, yeah. About noon, the emails suddenly stopped arriving. When we started investing, why this happened, so suddenly we found it out. The IT department at the EU is blocking delivery of the emails on the issue.
Oh, my goodness me.
How to control the vote, you bastards. And I've got to say, this is the last thing before we actually do the show, but there's none of the show left anyway. They have confirmed the cast for Star Wars Episode 7. Mark Hamill's in. Harrison Ford's in.
They haven't yet.
And
no, you're right. They have not yet.
Oh, I thought they were in.
No, he said George Lucas apparently said that they're in, but then he quickly backpedaled and nothing official's been announced. Even Kerry Fisher earlier in the week said, yeah, I'm doing it. But then her agency said, oh, no, she was joking.
Has she bulked up for the Jar Jar Gabor biography or something?
Jar Jar Binks.
I couldn't believe that was Carrie Fisher.
Exactly.
Carrie has actually been losing weight. She's looking much nicer now than she did.
Really? She looks like Jar Jar Gabor there, I have to say.
Yeah, and I was thinking that Mark Hamill looks like Bill Gates.
If there's any movie producers out there who want to seize on the opportunity, you could make a Jar Jar Gabor biography using Carrie as she's on the way. And as she gets younger, you can kind of do it in reverse, like Benjamin, what's his name?
Totally be a Benjamin Button thing.
A Benjamin Button review of Zsa Zsa Gabor's life.
It wraps up with Carrie Fisher in the slave Leia costume. It'll be awesome.
I was going to say, it could be Zsa Zsa Gabor does Benjamin Button, but she probably did anyway.
You're back in the porn stuff again.
But she can't see that anymore because the EU banned it. Yeah. I hope you're happy now.
I think she married, didn't she marry Benjamin Button? Must have done.
This is some strange world you live in.
Zsa Zsa Gabor was divorced like 50 times.
I'm so glad I found you guys.
Zsa Zsa Gabor was a serial monogamous, wasn't she? Most definitely. I think I married her as well at some point. Maybe. I can't remember. Let's do it before the show ends. This Week in Marissa Meyer. This Week in Marissa Meyer. I've got to watch the wobble meter, and if you lot talk, I'm knackered with that, but thank you. This Week in Marissa Meyer, what did Marissa Meyer do? Marissa Meyer got $1.2 million as a bonus... as a pro rata payment on the $2 million she should have got for 12 months pro rata for what she'd actually done. And if it's only 6 months, that makes it 2.4. So Simon Toon, who says that Marissa does nothing, pass this message
she
on, please, James. She clearly does a lot. She's got 1.2 on a pro rata at 6 months for $2 million. That's $2.4 million for the year. She's over budget.
What's she going to do with it all?
I don't know.
This is proof that work at home is a bad idea. Look how well it's paying off for her, bringing everyone back into the office.
And, well, the thing is, she's been pregnant for those 6 months. Hasn't she? Or she's not been pregnant, but she's been on maternity leave.
That's probably why she was only on maternity.
Well, if the woman can earn a $1.2 million bonus whilst on maternity leave, what the hell is she going to do when she comes back to work?
Exactly. That's probably why it's only $1.2 million. I was thinking it's a bit low.
Marissa Meyer is the Virgin Mary, as far as I'm concerned.
I thought Marissa Meyer was like a few weeks maternity, as I remember. 2 weeks maternity leave she took, and she worked through it, apparently.
However, there is a slight negative this week. Apparently, she angers lefty feminists very easily, which only makes me believe that Simon Toon is a lefty feminist. No? No? No word.
We're all lefty feminists in a way. There's a lefty feminist in all of us.
I gotta say, I'm sorry, Simon, if you're listening, but you're not. Forbes published this story where apparently she really angers lefty feminists quite a lot. But I read the story and I couldn't work out who they were and why.
It's not really a story, is it?
It wasn't a story at all.
So now lefty feminist. This is a new term for me. Well, I know both terms, but not conjoined. So,
interesting.
Feminists that are all left-handed?
who look at left-handed websites, absolutely. That's right.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
It's all clear to me now. I've got it.
Thank you.
No, lefty being a political political kind of socio... What's the word? Socialist.
Well, Democrats are to the left of centre. And lefties are even further. They're kind of communist.
Now, see, I liked it a lot better when it was left-handed feminists.
Like, yeah, there we go.
Left-handed feminists.
Marissa Meyer angers commie feminists. That's what the story should have read. Mm-hmm. Should we talk about the tech news or not? Because I think we've kind of done there. That's about an hour's worth already, and we were only supposed to do... Marvel Comics. Has everyone seen the Marvel Comics story?
Oh, I saw that earlier, and...
That just came out this afternoon, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because this show, I didn't join up yet, but I'm going to join this.
Well, Marvel Comics have released their entire back catalogue, and you can have 6 episodes for offline reading on your iOS device for $60 a year.
Can I just stop you there?
Go on.
Is it surely the whole point of having a comic book is it's paper, and it's a beautiful kind of thing you can hold in your hands. An electronic copy... Surely isn't the same, is it?
Oh, I love the electronic copy ones. Ever since I started listening to Andy Anatko's show, where he talks sometimes about comics, I got back into them and I started reading the X-Men and the Avengers again. Yeah, I know. Call me names.
No, I'm with you.
And it's great.
I totally got into it too. Again.
Yeah, I mean, the Dandy's gone online completely now, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't, maybe it's just me.
I mean, I buy them on the Marvel, the one, you know, as it comes out, you buy the new ones, and they're about £1.29, I think, for just one comic, and you can like shoot through the comic in about 5 minutes. But if you've got access, it's just like Spotify for music. If you've got access to the entire library of old Marvel comics, I mean, that's just, okay, you never own them, but then I don't feel you own digital stuff anyway. But yeah, if I can just go back and read all the old Spider-Mans and the Avengers and Thor and,
that's the point, is we're talking back to issue one.
Hmm.
The entire back catalogue, 60,000.
Yeah. And there's all the special events, big events that have taken place in the Marvel Universe, and just the ability just to go through them one after the other after the other.
I was going to say, maybe, well, two things there. One, you say you don't actually own a copy of it, and who knows that if you store it offline, all that happens is your iOS device says, no, you're not having that anymore, whips it away from you, and it's gone. And surely, too, I really do believe there's a tactile, it's just like records. I guess maybe I'm sort of thinking back to my childhood when I got these copies of 2000 AD and read through them and pored over them because they were organic and there. And then I put them back and they would be crumpled and beaten the crap out of. And actually, that was my copy. That was mine. And having an electronic copy just makes it so much more vulnerable and ephemeral.
But the problem you've got there, James, is that most of the people that listen to this show, when you say records, they think that what they keep's at the tax office. You know, I mean, there's an episode of a TV comedy, I can't remember the name, where the mother's holding up a disc and looking at it and saying, that is a thing of beauty. And the son says, what is it? And she says, that's Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto number 2. Beautiful. He said, no, the black thing with the hole in the middle.
We have this discussion a lot on the media show because Alex likes to keep his physical media, whereas I've just gone totally digital. Mm. And we always have this run-in every now and again where I try and defend the fact I've gone totally digital and all the space that saves and convenience of just being able to search for something and call it up and have it play on the speakers. But like him, but Alex, like you, James, he likes to hold the album cover, to look at the artwork and stuff. But I'm more interested in the content rather than the external.
I'm sort of in between the two of you. I actually liked... If I'm going to buy an album, I would still much rather buy a CD, and then I'll rip the CD, and I'll stick the CD in the cupboard, and it's my backup.
Well, my point, I guess, is
I'll just use the MP. I'll just listen to the MP3s, like Carl said. But you know, and I've actually got rid of all the dual cases and everything from the CDs and DVDs and everything, and I've stuck them in these things where you can store them like that, and it takes a minimum amount of space. You know, and just store them in the attic. That's it. Job done. Backup. You know, and I'll only use the MP3s. But
and the question
least
I have
got
for
that
you, Sarah,
physical media.
The question I have for you is, which is your collection? I would say the physical stuff is the actual collection. The stuff you have on your machine is just bits and bytes that sort of you have access to whenever you want to, and it could go away.
Yeah, I agree, but that's how you structure it and how you folder structures and so on and so forth, and how you store stuff. And you know, I do that with the CDs and DVDs. Sit in the cupboard and stuff like that, and you know, all the MP3s and the M4Vs and stuff sit on our server at home and are accessible from anywhere in the house. And you know, to me, they're equally as important. But I'm more aware of the fact that if the computer crashes, and I don't bother backing the MP3s on M4Vs up because I think, okay, if the hard disk drive crashes, and I'll just rip it again. No deal.
I'm sorry to change the subject here, Sarah, but isn't M4V an Apple format?
Whatever it is, M4V, it's whatever happens.
Correct me if I'm wrong, chat room, but I'm pretty sure that M4V is an Apple format.
It doesn't matter.
But the other thing is...
Now it doesn't matter.
Apple does use. It's called M4V file, but it's still an MP4.
It's MPEG-4 video format. It's just the way it's just the file extension.
Oh, come on. I wasn't being serious.
My collection, there's nothing in there that's so valuable if I lost it tomorrow, my life wouldn't change. I'd just go and get it again somewhere else.
Well, I think that's the point, Carl, that I was making in that because they are reissuing old comics then they are in some respects preserving it for the future, which is great news. But still, it's not the same as the old comics. It is almost like a facsimile, a replica. It's just like when you go onto iTunes and you see a remastered copy of something by Pink Floyd. Yeah, it's great. It's remastered. It's the highest digital quality copy. But I'd much rather get out my record and play an old, slightly scratched copy of The Wall, or you know, to listen to it, to my copy of it. If that makes sense. Maybe I'm just old fashioned.
No, that's fine. You can do that. But like, there's always going to be a percentage of people who want to do that, who want to be how it was. But then there's going to be always going to be a larger percentage of people who just want the convenience of reading the comic. I don't want to store comic books because they
take up
room
for you, then.
Fast.
How do they decide how much to charge for these old comics if there is no media and you're not actually paying for anything real and it's old?
Well, as you said, it's $60 for a year, I think it was.
Yeah, $60 for a year or $10 a month.
So for during all that time, you can download as many as you want.
What do you mean by download, Carl?
Let's take Spotify, for example.
You've got online access. That's a better way to describe it.
Which can be revoked at any time.
Yeah, but it's $60 a year.
Yeah, but then you just stop paying them.
No, I know, but then you've lost access to that entire library. That's the whole point.
I don't care once I've read it. Once I've read a story, I don't necessarily need to go back and read it again.
Music then as well.
Same with music.
Okay, so for me, the subscription thing works if you decide that you're going to do subscription music and you find an album or if it's a comic thing, a specific comic issue where you're going, oh my God, I must have this. Then you go out and buy a copy of that. Mm-hmm. But then the rest of it, you just continue to stream.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfectly acceptable.
And I've actually done that.
That's an interesting point, actually, Jeff, because my very favorite books, I prefer having books in electronic format now, especially reference books, but my very favorite books and the ones that are the most useful to me, I want in both forms. I want a paper one that I can hold in my hand, as well as the convenience of the electronic one I can have when I'm on the train and, oh, I need to look at this or I need to check up that. You know, I've got a way of actually doing that, and I haven't got to carry 50,000 books around with me everywhere.
I've got to say that I was with you on that, Sarah and James. I would have agreed with you 6 months ago, but I have to say that now I've realised that that's kind of a little bit OCD and a little bit autistic, and just the smidgenest bit. And I was that person. I was the one that wanted all of those physical copies because what if they took it off me? And just lately, I've decided I'm going to buy more stuff on the internet. I'm going to buy more stuff down through iTunes. And actually, I can keep that because I can click and I can say show in Finder and I can move it into my music folder. And it's mine. It's I bought The Good Shepherd a little while ago. And I bought Diary of a Wimpy Kid for Ellis a little while ago. And I moved those into my movies folder and they're mine now. They can't go away. I've got them, and I can back them up just in the normal way. But there's a certain element of looking at a line of CDs, a line of books, a line of records, vinyl, that has a collectibles element to it, which is nice. But I look at my son, and my son's got Asperger's, and he likes to collect things. He likes having collections all the time. But actually, the collection is fairly transient for him. Once he's got the collection, actually, he loses a lot of interest in it. And I think we're kind of a little bit like that as well. It's the collecting rather than the collection, absolutely.
I do see your point, Ewan, because, I mean, my son, 13 now, and he has got no physical music collection at all, and that just does my head in. But that's the new paradigm, I guess, is that everything that he holds dear is an electronic copy of it. I imagine he would be devastated if he lost access to what he loves so much. But I guess to lose something physical, as in a physical copy of something, or to have it damaged or destroyed, heaven forfend, in a fire or something, is so much less likely than a crash or unless you have this 3-2, this almost Asperger's autistic 3-2-1 backup thing, got to concentrate on making sure that I have my data all available at any time. And actually, oh my goodness me, I can spend a whole evening just sorting out my bloody MP3 collection. Oh man, it does my head in how long it takes me. But it's not there. And all it would take for me, for my hard drive, to go, right, not playing anymore. And that would have all gone.
Well, that's back up. That's a different thing. Yeah, but Chris, have you got any thoughts? Because you've been quite quiet here.
Well, I'm kind of like you. I've just started using Audible and various, you know, online book stuff and reading things online. But I still have the collections. And part of the history of it all, to me, and when it's my collection, is how I tore the corner or where I made a note or the one pain that, you know, struck me at a particular moment. You know, having that physical thing and how it interacted with me is just as much of a memory to having that stuff as the actual content contained within the covers. So I'm kind of of two minds. I mean, I definitely see that it's very cool to have the access that this app offers and be able to fill in a whole lot of holes and stuff that I never got around to reading. But, the collections and stuff, you know, like you say, they're yours. You get to have them, you get to hold them. I don't dig them out very much. I don't get to see that stuff.
Yeah, mine are on the loft.
It's still mine.
Can I just make a point that Wen just made in the chat room about, she's talking about engineering textbooks.
I wanted to make that point as well.
To me, that is an perfect example. Over the years that I've been working and writing software and, you know, trends change and technologies change, I bought a huge number of computer programming books and also on all sorts of different subjects, and they all have a limited life frame, normally a few years. And this is the perfect area for me that I've kind of thought, right, okay, I'm never going to buy a physical book again that's a reference book of anything I'm learning about in terms of technology, because I know it's only going to have a limited time frame. But when it comes to something like, you know, what, you know, a few of my favorite books, I want those in hardback sitting on the shelf that I can pick up and dip into at any moment. There's just something about that.
But I thought it's interesting,
so
what you say. Very quickly before, just to cut in, I'm sorry, you to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
It's really interesting what you're saying, Sarah, because if you're comfortable with these technical books being in electronic format, Beth is really worried. She's doing an Open University course at the moment, and they are soon going to be removing the de facto, at the moment, every few months, you'll just get this massive parcel come to the front door with all her textbooks in. And she's really worried that soon they're all going to be delivered electronically, and she won't have that, being able to sort of all have all her paper around her and be able to shuffle through a real physical textbook to look through stuff. And I'm wondering, does it suit you to have it all electronically?
Yes.
You know, one piece of paper at once.
I've always
been... You can access it.
I've always been, certainly for the last 5 or 6 years, and people at work will tell you this, is I drive them nuts because I'm totally believe in the paperless office. You know, I live that and I have done for a long time. And when it comes to stuff that I'm going to use that I know is transient, like something that's only going to be relevant for 3 or 4 years, I don't want, you know, I've chucked out so many computer books over the years because the technology they're talking about in the book is no longer relevant. And, you know, for them, it is an absolute no-brainer. In your case, James, where your wife's doing a course, I think if you've got books that you're using for a course and you absolutely know you're going to need for that period of time, then you back those up. You know, you store them off-site through Dropbox or whatever so that you know that there's absolutely no way you're going to lose them. But then once the course is finished, you can delete them. You know, and there's no physical issue. But that way, you know, during that period when you're doing the course, yes, you have to, you know, you can't just be so throwaway about it. You do have to treat that as an important, you know, files on the computer that you'd back up in the same way that you'd back up important information, you know, personal information.
I mean, the upside is I know that I can get her a Kindle for Christmas and she might be quite happy.
Yeah. You see, now the Kindle is a very interesting point because I don't know if you remember, there was a few months ago we talked about a case where a woman had her Amazon account revoked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really got me thinking about the walled garden. And as you know, everyone jokes with me about the fact that I don't like Apple because I don't like the walled garden thing. And I've allowed myself to get into the Kindle walled garden. And that really made me stop and think about, well, I'm not totally convinced that I want to commit that to, you know, to having all my reference books stored in Kindle format. So I've started looking at other ways of maybe being able to store it in a format that isn't just available on the Kindle, that if, you know, that happens, I can still look at it or convert it to a PDF or whatever other format that I want to. And that's sort of something I'm starting to think about in terms of how I actually store, you know, my reference books.
I'd just like to thank everyone for joining me on the media show tonight.
He's a bit like that, isn't it, Carl?
I was going to say, one of the best things about the electronic versions of everything is now I can carry manuals for all the projectors, all the audio boards, all the stuff that I touch.
Yes.
Daily work. That's all on my iPad now. I come across
it's
something.
It's great, isn't it?
It's that menu item. And I can scroll right to it, open it up, and it's right there. And it takes up no space. I'm not hauling around a bunch of books. Copies. That has made my life hugely better and easier when it comes to work and trying to look smart.
Cool.
Excellent. I hope you all had a good conversation while I went for a pee.
I think I wonder if Google Glass will be the next kind of level of that, where you actually have the information just sort of scrolling in front of your eyes. Just sort of, if you want to be, just tell me about the PHP script to do this. You just go, oh, there you go. You can make yourself look really clever.
About 3 minutes ago, the only Google Glass I wanted was one I could fill. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, were you planning on saving that for your trip to Mars?
Yes, absolutely. Adam in the chat room says definitely M4V was created by Apple.
Ooh. Sure it was. But as James said, we're actually talking about MPEG-4.
No, it mirrors MPEG-4, but it was created by Apple. I just got to get the final word in there. Sorry, Sarah. Sorry. What else has happened this week?
The chat room wants to talk about Facebook.
Facebook has had a bit of a leak this afternoon, or not a leak. They've had a little bit of a soiree, haven't they? Where they've improved all of their stuff. They've taken Facebook news and they've made it into something worthwhile. It's more pictorial. And bigger is better, according to CNET. Discuss. I've got to say, I struggle to find anything that Facebook does to invigorate me. It just, I look at what they do and they have an event for it, and I'm like, why did you have an event for that?
Do you know what Facebook does for me now?
Go on.
Share my friends who are the most small-minded, bigotrous people I know.
And that's it.
Now, who actually goes to Facebook as a news source? I mean, really?
News? No way. No. All I go to Facebook for is to find out what products my friends are looking at the adverts for. I'm going, like, I might win something.
Now, you may not believe this, guys, and I hope you're all sitting in chairs that have got arms on it, but I'm actually about to put a compliment Apple's way.
Oh, dear.
Wow.
Where were you?
It's really interesting listening to you talking about Facebook having an event and stuff like that. And I just think they are so trying to follow Apple in terms of trying to be so good at marketing. And they are absolutely useless when it compared with Apple, who are the masters at this sort of thing. The great thing about Apple is that you don't even know that you're being marketed to, because you know, we all, you know, okay, I'm one of the few.
We're being marketed to.
Marketed to. You know, when they bring out the new iPhone or the new iPad and so on and so forth, you know, because they've got everybody in the palm of their hands. And, you know, that is, they've done a fantastic job, and I totally take my hands off them. And it's so funny trying to watch a company like Facebook think, we want a piece of the action. We want people to think about Facebook the same way that they think about Apple. They haven't got hope in hell's chance.
Well, they're throwing around a blunt instrument in a lot of respects. They've got this sort of, is it not the social graph anymore? It's something else graph. Oh, my goodness me. Oh, bless her. Missy's just put one of those postcard things up with words and a badly sketched picture on it. Oh, I've just gone to Facebook and I'm just going, this is so uninspiring.
I think that's certainly the point, though, isn't it? I mean, that's the key problem that you've got with Facebook, is that you look at Apple and you go, where's the wow? And there was a question last week on the photo show about the cult of gear, where someone buys them because it's the glitzy and it's the shiny. Mm-hmm. And there is an element of that with Apple. You look at it and you buy it because it's the shiny. What's the shiny with Facebook? You know, Facebook has got a better way that's bigger of sending you the same information that you had before.
Okay, there's a fundamental difference between the way Apple's business model works and the way Facebook's business model works. And because of that, I don't think Facebook will ever be able to come up with a media event where they can make themselves look cool and slick like Apple does. With Apple, they're selling a product or series of products, which is a combination of hardware and software and services. What Facebook is selling is us. And yeah. Really, we are the product for Facebook and whatever interface
selling
changes they make. Both. Yeah.
That's probably the truth, Jeff. But that's not necessarily what they want us to believe.
Oh, no, they don't want us to believe that at all. But because that's the truth, and they have to try and spin what their business is to make it more palatable to the public, Apple has years and years of experience refining their delivery. Facebook does not.
I think that the problem that you've got with Facebook is that Facebook is, to a certain degree, trying to expand itself towards other companies that traditionally need news feeds like Yahoo and MSN and those kind of things, and AOL. And those companies are trying to extend themselves towards being more social in their interaction with people. And
they're going to miss each other, aren't they?
Exactly. They're two planes. It's a plane flying past a drone. And Facebook's the drone, because it really is. You know, when do you go to Facebook? And I've got to say, I've got a Facebook account, and I go to Facebook on a regular basis, but I go usually when the email address that's associated with it pops up with a notification that says so-and-so sent you a message, or here's your notifications for the week, and it's a once-a-week go in and see what everyone was saying.
Do you know when I nearly go to Facebook? Do you know when I nearly go to Facebook? It's when I sign in or sign up for something, and it goes, sign in with your Facebook account. I'm going, yeah, right.
I can't remember the password.
Like you, and I also have a Facebook account, and I hardly ever use it. In fact, the only reason I've kept it is because there are certain people I'm in touch with that only have accounts on Facebook, and it's the only way I've got to stay in touch with them in terms of electronically. I would wish that everybody, that are friends on Facebook was on Twitter, because then I really wouldn't bother with Facebook at all. I'd be quite happy to delete my account.
Now, we're talking about the existence of Facebook in its current form. When it comes down to the actual, to the news feed, the way that everything is being laid out, expressed, the fact is, until apparently now, the iPhone app and the mobile version of the site has been just woeful. Are they going to be fixing that? Will that help?
I can't see that they understand the term fix, though.
That's broken.
Exactly. That's my point. You would fix something if it was broken. But the way I've heard Zuckerberg talk, and I don't know if he's just feeding off his own bullshit or whether someone's whispering his ear through a little mic, an earpiece or something that's saying, say this now, Zuck. But I don't get the impression he's had any hands-on experience with Facebook in the last few months, because it's not following any patterns that he would decide. It's following patterns that other people are controlling him and investors would decide. And he is just purely the guy in the hoodie that's making a mint off the top and saying the right things that everyone else wants to hear. Facebook, for me, is soulless now, utterly soulless.
I think that's right, Ewan, and I think that was borne out by what happened with the IPO. I don't think that was Mark's particular desire to actually go to the market at that point, but I think it's the investor, early investors, saying, come on guys, we want some of our money back.
Absolutely.
Do you think the photocentric new view is kind of like trying to...
There was something in there that actually said, when I was reading it, it said about the fact that it made the size of adverts larger, and I'm thinking, okay, where's that coming from? Is that really what people are going to want to see?
I don't think so. The photocentric and video element of YouTube is nothing more than a ploy to get the big networks Facebook in to start spreading information in there.
Yeah, maybe.
Through their advertising pages and their fan pages.
The point is, I still think the Facebook model is not proven. It never has been, and I've not seen anything yet that makes me think, yep, they're going to be around in 10 years' time. The only thing that they've got in their favour is the number of users they've actually got signed up. But unless you can actually do something to, turn that into cash, then you're not gonna get anywhere.
To be fair to them as well, though, Sarah, they have looked at culling the number of users that they got that are inactive to try and hit a realistic number, because people are saying, "Well, okay, you've got a billion users, but how many of those users actually bother to post anything?" And that's a significantly different number.
That's good, but even so, even if you've got half that number, if you haven't got a model that you can actually, monetize that, you haven't got a business. You've just got, a website that allows people to do things. And that's great. That's great from a social point of view, but it's not actually going to make
investors and the people that started the business.
That's exactly the key. It's not about the fact that Facebook actually has a business model. It's that Facebook provides a service that lots of people want. And I think Facebook is the product. I know what Jeff's saying, you know, if you get something free, it's because you're the product, not the... But I think Facebook hasn't worked out how to sell its product. Mm. And the product constantly never does anything that's sellable. The product just wants to talk to their mates, and that's all they get from it, and that's all they care about. And if they get an advertising meal, so what? I'm never going to click on it.
I know that's the new way of doing things. You know, Twitter do the same thing to some extent, but I think they've actually been slightly cleverer, and that they seem to have a plan of knowing where they're going. Obviously, we don't know what it is yet, but they do seem to be a bit smarter about the way they're actually going about it.
Well, Twitter's been a bit of a blunt tool as well, really. With the way they're trying. As soon as any social network tries to gain control of the social network, then it makes itself irrelevant and the social network falls apart because people become disenfranchised with it.
Yeah, James, I'm not saying that they're perfect. All I'm saying is they seem better than Facebook.
Let's let Jeff come in, because Jeff, you had a point there.
What was my point? Oh, I remember.
It was a long time ago. So I apologize.
That's all right. My short-term memory is working today. Facebook has proven one thing so far, which is that people as a whole are more than willing to give up just an insane amount of personal information. And so the trick is, how do you monetize that? And that's the part I think that Facebook is working on proving now. And I have a feeling that even though we're looking at this going, this is a mess, it's ridiculous, there's probably a method to that madness, and that it actually is working out much better for advertisers and information aggregators. And I have a feeling that unless Facebook completely mismanages their business, they'll be around for quite a while, because I don't see any indication that people are going to change their behavior and start being more protective of their personal information.
I don't think... here's my thought process, coming back on what Sarah was saying, James was saying, and following on from what you said there, Jeff. I think the problem that Facebook have got is that they've got all of these people that are the captive audience. Yes, I fully agree. The chat room's pointing out to me here, you know, if you get something for free, it's because you're the product, not because... they're the product, but exactly. I think the problem is that Facebook has got hold of a slippery eel, and the trouble is that they've provided a facility that is there that people only want to use for the purposes of communication, and no one clicks any of the adverts anymore. No one goes to any of the links that they offer. There's a few people playing the games that are monetizing and making some basic income, but which is not significant enough to sustain them. So they try and invent the front end process for the user, but actually none of the users want to use that. The users that are out there...
catch up.
No, but I think this is the difference, is that, and this is the problem with Twitter, is that the users use social media for the purposes of communication with other people on that social network, and they don't click the ads. They don't click the things that they're saying that they are selling on to the user. Because if someone says, oh, there was an advert on Facebook for a set of Nike trainers, or there's an advert on Facebook for a Panini Grill, and the first thing that comes back is not Facebook selling that, it's Amazon, and they buy it off Amazon.
Yeah.
Facebook because is feeding Amazon's business model, not their own.
Yeah, because Amazon is bricks and mortar.
Or it's not, close. but yeah.
Well, but Amazon isn't trying to present itself as a social interaction engine. It is you're absolutely right. It is a shop.
Yeah.
It's an online front to basically a warehouse.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's a warehouse that's not making money. What kind of weird business model is that? Amazon runs at a loss all the time.
Does it?
Based on the fact he's got his own space fleet, I don't believe that.
I bet that's probably more about the fact that the money's being reinvested in the business to develop.
No, I bet that's more on the fact that the money is going out to Liechtenstein, where they only pay 3% corporation tax. Call me a cynic.
I will accept that.
But I think the problem that Facebook has got, getting back to the point in hand, is that Facebook's business model actually fuels more of the businesses, and they don't have something which they can actually sell and make the quantities of money. They're making money. I'm not saying they're making a loss, but I don't think they're making the quantities of money that investors and people who've paid the hard dollars to own shares in them at the core level are getting money back from it. There's no dividend coming out of that process.
People think that Facebook is free, and if there's any kind of even veiled attempt to make it look like people are making money off of them. I mean, people watch ad. If you watch an advert on the television, the money that's paid for that advert has come out of the money you've paid for the product you've bought. That's how advertising works. Facebook cannot afford to even hint at the fact that they are making money out of what you're doing, because as soon as they do that, people are just going to go, I thought it was free.
I don't think people are that naive that they think that Twitter is a free service. There are strings associated with it. But you've got Google, which is extremely good at getting rid of advertising email and spam email, who take an awful lot away from end users. And I think that people, if they see stuff that comes through that's clearly associated with Twitter or Facebook, will just delete it anyway. I don't think they're naive anymore.
They will reject it.
But the point is, Ewan, if I was an investor in those companies, that is the bit that would really worry me.
Absolutely. I mean, Facebook was the here and now. They've got people's money at the basic level of investment. They're now starting to try and get it out, and they're trying to reinvent themselves constantly, because, I mean, I think this is about the third keynote that we've had in the last 6 months from Facebook about how they've reinvigorated themselves, how things are new, how information's coming out differently. And in the long and the short of it, it comes down to the fact that people want to send their messages to mates to say, I'm going to be down the pub about 7 o'clock. Are you going to be there? Or, blimey, I haven't seen you since school. And that's it.
Well, okay, that's part of the problem. And Facebook is, I think, trying to fix that from their perspective with these changes they're making. Facebook doesn't want you to leave their site. They want to be the only place that you go to on the internet, because if they're keeping your eyes on their page, then ad revenue goes up.
Absolutely right. I think you're exactly right on what they want. But here's the question, Jeff. Are they realizing that?
That's a really good question. Maybe they are to a degree. And maybe they are completely, but I think another question is, are they actually implementing that effectively? And based on what we're saying, I'm going to speculate no, they aren't.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jeff, on that. I think the problem is that they have a business model, they have an idea of what they want, but it's utterly ineffectual in application. An utterly ineffectual application means they make $1.2 billion a quarter rather than making $10 billion a quarter. They still make money. I'm not suggesting they don't.
AOL.
They're certainly not. What? Who are AOL? I remember them. They gave you 300 hours of porn, didn't they? Free of charge at the start when you signed up for them.
We've come full circle, haven't we, Ewan?
Absolutely. Oh, God bless America.
Absolutely.
Posters in the mail.
Has anyone got anything else in the dot they fancy talking about?
We were going to maybe cover the double authentication thing.
Go ahead, James. Start us off.
I was going to say that I had it on my Google phone for a little while, and I thought it was brilliant until I realized that half of my applications didn't support it, and I had to type in some crazy password that I had to store on the site. And then I realized that if everybody does two-stage authentication, I'll have my application and then a bunch of other icons on my phone where I have to press a button to type something in to make it work. So, not really. I like the concept of it, but I can't see its practical application unless there is one double authentication method for everything, which of course will probably break it.
Which story are you actually talking about?
This is the Evernote one.
Oh, got you right. Evernote does verification via mobile phone.
They're a little bit frightened, you see, because they had a vulnerability somewhere in their internal systems. People managed to get the encrypted passwords and potentially the salts as well. And of course, as soon as you've got that, you can use brute force and all these clever things to be able to get people's passwords. They want to take it one stage further, so you have to hold a piece of information to be able to get into their systems, which is perfectly understandable from their point of view because they want to protect their users. But from our point of view as users, does it reduce the usability? And I suggest that if every application has that, yes, it does.
Well, you don't have to use it. I'm not suggesting it's got to be used. It's just up to you, isn't it?
But if you say yes to it, you have to do it.
Yeah, but then you can always turn it off later if it becomes too much of a hassle.
Which I did, and therefore I'm back to square one.
James, do you not use this sort of thing when you're working remotely with work?
Yes, but that's... that's the point, though, isn't it? Once I am in the work VPN, I have access to all the tools. I have access to SSH, I have access to Outlook, Word, my shared drives, with one authentication. If I need to double authenticate to get to Evernote, and then do two authentications to get to Google, and then two authentications to get to Facebook... No, I'm not going to bother with that one.
So what we'll end up with is a situation where we'll probably start off with that sort of pain, and then it will come down to something where there'll be a common standard.
Let's hope so. I apologise, by the way. Fritz in the chat room has said it's two-step authentication, not double authentication.
You haven't got to put all your details in twice plus a phone number. It's
no.
It's recovery process, isn't it?
It's not recovery process.
No.
If you have something,
all that sort of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. It's also the fact that if you go to, for example, an internet cafe or some untrusted computer, you're not just typing your password in. You are getting something from your own equipment to be able to have that state, that surety. But it's still a faff.
I tell you what would be a really good way of doing this to get around that issue. And that is that if all these sites actually had a way of detecting whether there was a VPN in place, and if it was, fine, okay, we don't need that.
Well, you say that, but VPN actually has caused me more grief than anything this year, thanks to using a VPN which spoofed a US IP, and therefore PayPal said, no, you can't be authorising a payment from the US. No, you've never done that before. And they shut my account down.
That's a bit extreme.
And I sent a message to PayPal on Twitter, and I said, this is stupid. And they said, well, DM us, because they didn't want the conversation to be public. and I said, how can you tell me that in 2013 you cannot deal with a VPN adequately? Yeah, and the guy wrote back, we don't do VPNs very well, I have to admit. Well, okay, go get it sorted then. I'm giving you enough sodding money, you bastards.
But this is what I'm saying. If it became a common standard, and then I'm thinking about the example that James said about, I use two-factor authentication for work as well. And if you actually were able to have a two-factor authentication, so you could choose one method to create VPN tunnel into somewhere, a trusted site, and then all the sites that you went to said, okay, fine, we see you're on a VPN, so we won't ask you for the two-factor authentication, then it would actually become a lot more tolerable. Because
now, in fairness,
it would only be asking you for that if it actually didn't see a secure connection.
In fairness, there are some things that I am perfectly happy to use two-factor authentication for. For example, making payments on my internet banking. I'm happy to have the little machine and my little card and to type stuff in. But for Evernote, I'm just wondering if it's... Does my data matter that much? Or do I consider my data to be vulnerable enough that I require to protect it with that? And if that's the case, that's a bit frightening.
I think you've got to look at what it's collecting.
If your data is that important or critical or needs to be that secure, maybe an online service isn't the place to store it.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, there's an interesting thing. Google have got a bit of a push on at the moment with mobile verification, and every time I sign in on a Google Gmail address, it says to me, "We need to do authentication of your phone number. So we're going to send you a verification code." And when you look at the options to click, it says, "Send verification code" or "Remind me later." It doesn't do "Sod off, you annoying bastards! I don't want anything to do with you." So that idea of taking that verification code process away, once they've got your phone number, that is it. They want to keep saying it on. And now, regardless of the fact that they said, no, remind me later, the next time I log in, it comes back. And the picture that they use is a bloke with swag over his shoulder in a hooped shirt with a bandit mask on, sat in front of your computer. Geez. That is I'm not kidding you. That's what Google is currently using as the message to me to tell me to verify my access process. Phone number. Because, the person that is stealing my data is not sat in front. If they were sat in front of my computer, all they've got to do is, it's Hamburglar. All they've got to do is reach under the desk and pull out the little book of passwords that I keep under my desk. There's no one sat in front of your computer stealing your data. My mother would look at that picture and think that was the way that they were getting into the computer. Well, we never let them in, so we're all right.
Okay, now see what we get, yeah. Okay.
You know, it's you're selling security for online service based on a myth of the 1930s of the frigging Pink Panther. It's just ridiculous. And it when it comes down to it, I've had enough. Go on, sorry.
Do you want
to? You know, the whole thing with using your phone number as part of the verification validation process, to me, is a little bit underhanded, because the real value in giving up your cell phone number like that isn't for your own protection. Once the company has that, they now have a lot of other information about you besides just where to send you a text message. I mean, they know who your carrier is, and then they can get other information based on that. So there's a lot of value in companies having your cell number, and they like to find ways to get you to willingly hand that over.
Maybe I'm being naive, but I just think that's a load of tosh.
No, I don't think it's a load of tosh at all.
I hate the conspiracy theory idea of that. I do genuinely believe, and certainly with Google, that they're doing it because they genuinely care about the security of their users.
Well, I hope that they do care about the security, and I'm not offering it up as a conspiracy theory thing, but I have worked in with some companies that were really adamant about getting cell phone numbers out of customers and prospective customers because of all of the other information that they can get from that. So there is a lot of value in that.
It's
also a trust thing, isn't it? If they've got to make sure you think you trust them for them to be able to take what they want off you.
No, I think the thing is there's an understanding of statistical data and the analysis of the stat that gives you benefit of above and beyond the specific information of the individual. So what you're saying there, Jeff, is right as far as I see it. I mean, I've been going on at my rugby club just in the local area. We're a rugby club in a small village. The small village, if you go back 20 years, had people who were 20-somethings who were just having kids. Now we've got to a situation where those kids are grown up and are at university, and those 20-somethings are now 50-somethings. So they're not playing rugby anymore, and their kids aren't around to play rugby anymore because they've gone away to university. And my question to the rugby club is, why aren't we giving free sponsorship to some of the local estate agents to find out specific data about who's buying houses in the local area? Now, I'm not talking about, I don't want to know their name. I want to know whether this area is selling houses to 20-somethings or 40-somethings or 50-somethings or 60-somethings. Because if it's selling them to 30 to 40-somethings who've got kids who are in the 10 to 15 age bracket, we should be hitting this village with flyers and advertising in the local shops. If that's not the case, we should be going further afield to estate agents, realtors, and saying, who are you selling to who's 30s to 40s? And find out where those regions are and canvassing those areas. And everyone goes, well, we're never going to get that. Well, yeah, you probably would. If you gave them free advertising as an estate agent, they'd probably give you that data because it's bland and it means nothing to them. They're not giving away individuals' data. They're giving away trends. And the core value of statistics isn't in they know my name is Ewan Rankin and here's my cell phone number and I'm on the Three network. It's the fact that I am a 40-something in the postcode of with the Three network. It's the trend that's the value. Jeff's absolutely right on that. I'm sorry.
That's interesting how that very quickly that Google are very good at that. And what Facebook are trying to do is they're trying to tangle up the individual relationships between named real individual people rather than getting the overall trends, rather than say, I mean, didn't they for a while, they had that thing where you could actually have, you can market yourself to white 35-year-olds and stuff, but they are still focusing on the way people interact with individuals interact with each other. That's really weird, isn't it?
I think the problem with Facebook is Facebook can tell you the quantity of people that went to Eversmith High.
Yeah.
And that's, and everyone goes, and?
Yep.
And that's the trouble. That's the trouble with Facebook is it doesn't give you the trend data that's critical. Where, how old are you? Where are you?
Monetize.
Exactly. That's the problem. Good discussion. Good discussion. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. We've had some emails and some. We've had a couple of people write in this week and say how much they've enjoyed the service. And they have said also that they're very happy that when they buy stuff from UK2, who provide a good service anyway, they've. Feel like they're supporting the British Tech Network because we don't have any sponsors, we don't actually make any money or anything like that. We just do this for fun. So UK2 keep us on the air because the problem is if they disappeared, the bandwidth charge for the amount of bandwidth that we consume would be around £450 a month on a personal server, and we never have to pay them a penny. They pick it all up. So by buying service from UK2. You're keeping us on the air. And there's a few people have tweeted out saying how good the customer service is on your UK2. And it really is. You know, you raise a ticket. If it's a critical ticket, it's usually solved within the next hour to 2 hours. It's brilliant. Anything that you want, go to BritishTechNetwork.com, click on the sponsors page, click on the UK2 logo. That'll take you through to their page. Then come back to ours, because ours will be in the other previous tab, and use all the offer codes, and the offer codes will get you an absolute fortune off the stuff that you buy from UK2. We've got an offer code for everything that they sell. So please support them, because by virtue of the fact that you're supporting them, you're supporting us. We love them to bits. Thank you ever so much to them and to you, because you have been buying loads. There's loads of people out there who are tweeting out saying that they've got UK2 service, and UK2 sent us an email the other week saying that we've got fantastic traffic from the British Tech Network. So thank you very much. Means an awful lot to us. It's time for the cool thing. Now then, Jimmy boy, what have you got?
Yes,
for us?
Well, this one's quite difficult. You're going to have to bear with me. I'm going to have to turn my speakers on so I can hear what's going on.
Don't do
I've got to move my microphone around.
Good man.
There we go. Right, unplug myself. I need to turn the camera around to point to telly.
Okay. Have you got a teleprompter there? That's a blue screen of death, right. Dude.
The whole thing is scripted. Let me just tilt it up a little bit. There we go. Now this is...
Oh my God.
Go on.
It's called Chameleon Pi, and it's basically an old 8-bit computer emulator for the Raspberry Pi.
I was just going to say, is it something to do with the Raspberry Pi?
That's correct. So this is my Raspberry Pi at the top here. I don't know if you can see it. But running on here, you can run the ZX Spectrum, Game Boy, NES, Super Nintendo, Atari 800. And I was playing it with it earlier. It's taken a little while to get going. But I've got, for example, on the ZX Spectrum, let me get it up there, boot it up, and...
Do you get the wiggly lines down the side?
It doesn't do the wibbly lines because you load the tapes on, unfortunately. Oh, you probably could. You could probably play it.
I want the wiggly lines.
But if I press the file open and go back to ROMs, Spectrum.
Yeah.
There's Manic Miner there.
Wow. Oh, brilliant.
And I really am awful at this. There he is.
I finished Manic Miner.
There you go. You finished Manic Miner?
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
And Jet Set Willy.
I'm going to die. Oh.
Well, I believe there's one level beyond the first one.
Come on.
Don't tell me, James, you've got a cassette player attached to the USB port on the Raspberry Pi.
Wouldn't that be fabulous? Anyway, there you go. Manic Miner on your Raspberry Pi.
Batwinch says, where's the loading sound?
Fortunately, they dispensed with that.
Now, I want the cassette tape attached to the USB slot, then you can do it properly.
Well, it's that old story, Sarah. If you want it, you're going to have to get the physical ZX Spectrum, just like the good old days.
I still have mine.
I'm only teasing.
Don't get a virtual one, like the Kindle version of a Spectrum. There we go, I'm back at my desk now.
Gasman says, why do people want to play the old games? It's because they're better, Gaz.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't beat Jet Set Willy. Jet Set Willy was the game on the Spectrum. Only because
anyway,
of the name. I never
Chameleon
played it, really.
Pi. Type in Chameleon Pi into your favourite search engine. The link's in the chat room. Link's on the document bar, stick in the chat room. So, yes, good fun.
There you go. I loved that. There was a thing about the Raspberry Pi. I got a press release earlier on, and they offered me a phone call with their Jambassador.
The Jambassador.
The Jambassador.
Oh, very clever.
They're all about the jam. Excellent. Jeff, do you have a cool thing for us?
I do. And it's one of those cool things that most people would probably never even think of or find. It's a website called Coffitivity, like coffee and activity put together. And what it does is it... Okay, so the idea is if you're working alone in an office and it's really, really quiet, studies apparently have shown that people aren't as productive or creative. But when they get up and go to the coffee shop and there's that low-level ambient noise thing happening, they can be more creative. And so this website was created that just plays the ambient coffee shop sounds. And I stumbled across it. I ended up writing it up for Mac Observer a couple days ago too, simply because it was just one of those things where I thought, well, I never would have thought of that. But it just turns out to be a really clever little site. And I even tried it out myself because my office tends to be very quiet if I'm not playing music. It was kind of cool. It felt like I was in a coffee shop without the expensive coffee to go with it.
So did it enhance your productivity or?
When I was playing with it this morning, the other day, no. But when I was playing with it this morning, I was just really tired. And I thought, I need something happening to get me going again. And it kind of brought me out of that morning tired funk thing.
Yeah, good.
Surprised me.
Very good. I like that.
Excellent. And it's free.
Stick a link in the show notes if you would, please, mate. And stick a link in the chat room because they're screaming already for it.
Oh, all right. Coming to the chat room.
Sarah, what do you have for a skill?
I don't particularly have a cool thingy as such, after the comments...
You've been on Aldi for 2 weeks.
Hang on, I haven't finished. I wanted to defend Evernote because I think it is great. And if they have two-factor authentication, bring it on.
It is service, yes, but I don't think it's quite that important. There's a bit of marketing in this, I think.
Right. No, I'm sorry, but I actually think it's a good idea. And they were really great with the way they actually dealt with the problem that they had last weekend. They got everybody to change the password, which I think was a really good idea.
I hate that because they never let you have the old password that you wanted.
Yeah, but that's the whole point, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that bothers me is that you always get said that the user is the weak link and so on. But actually, when everything's said and done, the only time I've ever lost any money has been through the service provider losing my details and giving them out. I got a thing through on the correct email address from HMRC that was a phishing email saying that I'd got a refund due. All I had to do was click the link to claim it and fill in the form. And that came this week, and it came on the correct email. There's one email registered with HMRC, and it came on the correct email. And I can guarantee you I am not stupid enough to have allowed someone in to know that email to make sure that they sent it to the right place. That has come out of the HMRC website. I've got no question of that in my mind.
Really? That's frightening.
I have no doubt because they've got the exact email, and they've done it 3 times this week, and they've got the correct email address. But that has not come from me.
Did it have anything in the email that actually indicated any personal information?
There was nothing in it, in the email, that suggested that they were... they knew who I was, they knew the correct email address, they didn't have my account number or anything like that. But who would get the... Because the thing is, with those kind of stuff, you can tell the spam emails, because it's like, the Bank of Co-America owes you $25 and they send it to 3 of your email addresses. You're like, well, A, I'm not in America, and B, you've sent it to 3 different email addresses all at the same time. That's a bit stupid, really. But this one has come to the email address that's registered with HMRC, and it's not gone to any of my other email addresses. So if it had come from me, then it would have gone to all of those other email addresses.
Did it do things like address you as Dear Mr. Rankin or anything like that?
Yes,
it really? Did.
Yes.
Okay. So. That is a bit worrying.
I forwarded it onto the phishing thing, but there we go. Chris, do you have a cool thing for us?
I do. It's a bit of a reach. But one of the things in my work that I come across once in a while is that you try and plug your computer into a projector or a switcher, and what you're projecting is 1280 by 720 or 1920 by 1080, and you just cannot get the signal to register with the computer. It just won't put anything out. Well, there's a little, and this is for VGA. They make other ones too, but Hall Research has a little VGA dongle. It's about $70. It's not cheap, but it contains basically every EDID list in a table in here. And you put this between your laptop and the projector, and it opens up any of the resolutions that you may not be able to access directly through your video card. MacBook Airs are too smart for their own good. If they don't sense a TV at the other end, which over VGA, they don't always get that information, it won't let you do 16 by 9 resolutions. My Airs, I had a problem 2 weeks ago with the fact that they would not send out, on the boot camp side, still wouldn't send out 16 by 9, you know, 720 or 720 or 1080p resolution. So this is from Hall Research. It's the EMEDID HD15. It's unpowered, but it's also programmable. You can buy a program, but you don't need it. It comes out of the box, and it solves. It is one of those Swiss Army knives for if you're a presenter or somebody who has to do presentations and you're putting things on other people's. Nowadays, it's mostly televisions that are getting purposed in boardrooms instead of professional monitors. Those tend to be a little more limited in what they offer. This will save you.
We like that. And I know the question that Carl's just about to ask, how does it do with HDCP compliance?
Carl, good point.
It is VGA, so there is no HDCP.
So what I'm saying is if you've got a HDCP out from your MacBook Air, it doesn't care because it thinks it's sending it to a VGA outlet anyway.
Right.
Cool.
Did I answer your question there, Carl?
I wasn't going to ask that.
Oh, okay. What were you going to ask?
He already knew.
I wasn't going to ask anything.
All right, okay. Then. Fine.
I was coughing, that was all.
No, I know that Joe's saying VGA has no HDCP. That I know that it doesn't have it, but the problem is that unless it gets a feedback from an HDCP device, it refuses to play anything on Apple, so... well done.
There are ways around that, you know.
I know.
Get a PC.
Yeah. Mr. Madden, what do you have for us, sir?
Okay, my one, just a quick one for the iPad. It's called Read Quick. And what it is the last part of my workflow for when I'm finding stories for the media show. And all it is once you've stored all the possible stories that you want to go through, in my case on Pocket, you just call them up on Quick Read and it'll be like speed reading. So, and it also, it's probably not going to show up on the screen, but it will just show one word and it'll flash it up and it'll go to the next word, flash it up. So you get the entire article flashed before your eyes in about 60 seconds, if it's not too long, if it's the average size article.
Right.
And
sounds frightening.
No, because I, in the past, I used to do, I tried to learn speed reading and I got up to a speed where I could basically read a book in like an afternoon, but I couldn't get any faster than that, unfortunately.
That's enough. Anything else is greedy.
Sorry?
Anything else is just greedy. That's fast enough.
You got to get through books, haven't you? And I can't really, you can't really speed read on a Kindle because you got, well, you can, I suppose, but it doesn't work for me. But this one's really good. So I can put a load of articles in and I can just relax in the evening and go through and read them all really quickly. And it's either free or it's on one of the lower tier.
I just looked it up. US dollars, $3.99.
Oh, okay. It's gone up a bit. I think I must have got a release price then. But no, if you want to read through a load of stuff really fast, and what you can do, it's got a little browser in there as well. So you can visit a browser and then copy all the contents to the Read Quick format and just tear through an article.
Good.
It's very good.
Excellent. My pick... My cool thing is a program called PhotoBulk. It goes on your Mac device. It's available through the Mac App Store for desktops. And PhotoBulk is effectively a resizer that does watermarking for your photos.
Ah.
And now there's a slight difference between JPEG Mini, which is also out there. JPEG Mini does resizing, but it's got a 17 megapixel limit. So if you're shooting with a DSLR, the chances are it's not going to work with that anyway. The other thing that JPEG Mini used to do was it used to completely corrupt your originals. So whatever you dragged in, it would make a mess of. So you had to duplicate the folder, put all the stuff in there, duplicate all your files, and then you could drag them in and let them reprocess it. The beauty of this one is that it actually lets you create your folder for output. So you drag everything in, and then it says, where do you want to save it? You create an associated folder that you can put down as reduced or small or something like that in the subfolder, and it just does it. The watermarking is not digital watermarking. It's just a physical watermark. So you can put an image across or a copyright notice or something like that. But the reduction is actually very, very good. It takes it down to a very small size. And the difference between this and JPEG Mini is this is about £5 cheaper. JPEG Mini is, I think, $10.99, and this is $6.99. So it's a $10 mark as opposed to a $15 mark in the Mac App Store. And it does what it says on the tin. If you're expecting to pay this and get something that's Wizo and does digital watermarking and that kind of thing, no, it doesn't, I'm afraid. But for what it says it does just fine. So there you go. Photo bulk. Brilliant. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Hart?
Oh, it's going to have to be Twitter again, isn't it? I haven't done a play that with app.net in ages. I haven't done it all week this week. So it's
Signed up this week.
On as soon as I finish the show. SYZYGY on app.net and on Twitter.
I signed up for it and I paid me $20 and it's fine.
And
it's all right.
Excellent.
Mr. Gamut, where are you, sir?
I'm at Mac Observer, since that's where I work, but I'm also at Twitter and app.net as JGamut. So that's JGAMET.
Apparently as well, I spent your name wrong last week on the show notes. So I do apologize.
Yeah, I laid in bed and cried for 2 days.
Sorry, I can't undo it. I'm an evil individual.
I know. Go iron your hands.
Thank you.
Need an evil laugh to go with it.
Whoa. Sarah, where are you, Mrs.?
You can get hold of me on the Twitters at SarahJadenUK. And just a quick shout out. Next weekend, not this weekend coming, it's the start of the F1 season. So we'll be back with the F1 show.
Is that next week?
Yeah, it's next week. Not this weekend, it's next weekend.
Oh, bugger, I'd forgotten all about that.
And it's Australia, so it's a crazy time of the day.
No, but it's the following day. No, it's the day before, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll be early hours of the morning.
We like that. Definitely, definitely, definitely. Chris, where are you, sir?
I am on the Twitters at Chris Esch, C-H-R-I-S-S-C-H. And just a little shout out to you. The link that you tweeted out earlier this week of the Airborne F1 and practice or whatever.
GP2,
That was incredible.
It was.
Anybody's listening wants to see probably more airtime than the Blue Angels will get this year. That is...
He's well above the camera.
Yeah.
1995, I think that was, or something. It was well back. Last but my no means least, I'm not going to forget you this time. I do apologise, Carl. Where are you, mate?
I'm on Twitter at Clausio101 or fairly often on the media show every Sunday, apart from this Sunday.
More often. Why are you not on this Sunday?
Russ is taking a break this week.
Lazy bastard. My name's Ewan Rankin. You get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter and also at Ewan Rankin on app.net, and I paid me $20 and I'm in there. So,
Get in there.
And you've got until 3:30 tomorrow afternoon to register for our competition with 12 South, because they've released a brand new book, which is something that's a cover for your 15-inch laptop. It doesn't have to be a MacBook. It could be any laptop, really. And all you've got to do is write in saying 12 South competition, and you've got to tell me what the price of this was in pounds sterling based on the exchange rate of last Friday night at 5 p.m. So when the market's closed here in the UK at 5 p.m, what was the exchange rate? And take $79.99 in dollars and turn it into pounds and send it over to me, and you'll be entered in the competition. And at the end of that, they'll be sending one of you lucky people a book to go around your 15-inch laptop. And it'll fit anything. You can buy them in various sizes. So if you've got a Dell laptop at 15 inches, providing it's a similar size to the MacBook, it'll fit. Okay? So enter the competition. You've got till 3:30 tomorrow afternoon. Otherwise, you're in deep pub. That's for people in the chat room, really, because I'm not going to post this before 3:30 tomorrow afternoon, that's for sure. We'll see you next week. Have a great week. We've got photo show tomorrow with me on my own again because everyone else is working. I'm not. And we've got the Mac show in the afternoon with all the usual suspects back, including Mr. Green, who's giving us all £100 because he said he was going to publish an episode. And guess what?
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, dear. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Cheerio.
Cheerio.